out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 414, the 414th edition here at the Caffeination Podcast. This is the Broke and Fixins edition here at the Caffeination Podcast, because there's just so much stuff to talk about that we really can't go too far from the beaten track here. There's a lot of crazy things that have been happening this week. Some I can talk about, some I can't. So we're going to just push through as everybody usually does around these times. Just push through, make sure we get everything done right, and hopefully entertain you a little bit along the way. You are, of course, listening to the high-octane world of caffeine culture and technology news, lovingly brewed together and steeped into one wonderful little episode, usually rocking in at right around the 35-minute mark, give or take 5 or 10, depending on how we do. So other than that, you know, the Caffeination is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All the other member shows, including us, have agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational stuff. So it's really good to kind of go over there, check out all the other people who are involved. There's a lot of really great programming that happens over there. So, how's your week been? We're calling this the Broked and Fixins edition, mainly because the Caffeination website, as it was down and out for the count for roughly 27 or 28 hours. From midway on Tuesday until, like, I think around noon today. So, called up the hosting provider. I'm not yet ready to lay this at their feet. It's just I kind of wish they had been a little bit more helpful. Called up the hosting provider and said, hey, I was able to get into my website this morning, and now you're telling me the database can't be accessible. For those of you who don't know, the way WordPress kind of works out is that there's a database which has absolutely every piece of critical information in there. So that when you go to the caffeination.com homepage, it has to make all these different database calls, finds all the different posts and everything else that have to get put up. And from there, you know, it gets every single piece of information that it needs. The problem with that being that if something happens between the database and the actual files that you have stored on your website, things can get all kinds of messed up. So things got all kinds of messed up. I eventually had to truncate the database. I had to take a couple of the old stuff out. Found an interesting little piece of information. If you run a blog and you use something called Twitter Tools on your WordPress blog, and even if you don't have it posting a new blog post every time you tweet, because for some reason they think that this would be a good idea, so that it could either do digests of all your tweets or stuff like that and do a published thing. I think Twitter is inane enough as it is. I don't think I need to clutter my blog up with it. So the only thing I use Twitter Tools for is that when I publish something, I want it to go right out to the Twitter sphere. And the unfortunate side effect was that it has recorded every single one of my tweets inside the database for the last 4 months, and since I'm somewhat of a prolific tweeter, it kind of filled up some things, but that wasn't the problem. So I cleared it out, and that didn't fix it. There was a couple other things I tried and didn't fix it. I just wanted to kind of make you aware that in case you do use Twitter Tools and you have all your credentials plugged in, you might want to auto go in there and clean out that one particular table. Basically, if you use the PHP MyAdmin, you can go in there and just basically zero out that table and delete all the old tweets. It's not incredibly hard to do. In fact, if you want advice, just, you know, fire me an email at caffeination@gmail.com. I can help you with that. It's a little bit more servering than some people would like to do. So before we get into the rest of the fun little meat and potatoes here at the Caffeination Podcast, we have just a couple words from our sponsor. This podcast is sponsored in part by GoToMeeting. The spring is fast approaching here, and over much of the country, the rains are coming and the cold hasn't quite left us yet. Who wants to run across town or get into an almost certainly delayed flight for a tiny little meeting? You can skip the flight, skip the drive, and put down your umbrella. Use GoToMeeting to host an online meeting instead. It couldn't be simpler. Everyone logs on to GoToMeeting.com. They see your desktop on their screen. There's no delays, no canceled flights, just productive meetings. Imagine that. You can think about it. One click, no snow days, no worries over if you're going to hit monsoon season. You can just be hosting your own training session, product demo, all from the comfort of your very warm office. You can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days, but you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/tech podcasts. That's www.gotomeeting.com/tech podcasts for a free 30-day trial. All right, I'd like to thank GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the Caffeination Podcast. They're allowing us to do all kinds of crazy and cool stuff that we try and do on a regular basis around here. So, today's episode is going to be kind of interesting because I actually think we have more food and caffeinated bits than we do geek cruft, which is kind of a rarity, and usually I try and spread it out, but there's just a lot of really interesting stuff that I wanted to kind of talk about. The first little thing that we have up for you here, the wonderful little stories from actually over at TechCrunch. It says Google Apps Marketplace. The Google has actually released something they call the Apps Marketplace, not to be confused with an app store like you would have for an iPhone or for an Android device. Android actually calls it the Marketplace, but everybody else, it's like, oh, there's an app for that. But Apple's wonderful at advertising, so they have the word app and all that kind of ingrained in everybody's head. What this is if you use Google Apps for your domain, that is branded applications such as Gmail, Google Docs, Google Sites, any one of the other number of ones that are in there. I personally use Gmail and Google Docs, even though there's not too many people who are using my site in a collaborative fashion that way. It makes a nice, easy way to do a lot of the business that is the Puzzle Piece Productions, Caffeination Podcast, all that fun stuff. Google is now releasing what they're calling an apps marketplace. It allows you to plug other third-party applications into the functionality that already exists within Google Apps. It gives them one cohesive interface to go from application to application. Now, when I first read about it, I was like, okay, I don't get it. I mean, it's kind of hard to kind of figure out. But when you really look at it, there's a bunch of other really fun things that they have in there. And the one thing, for instance, that they demo in the video is that they demo a project management application. So you just go up there, you click, you go to the Google Apps Marketplace, which is google.com/apps marketplace. And as long as you're signed into your app's domain, you can basically just add it in with a click. Yeah, some of them have a subscription fee. Some of them are a one-time fee, and I haven't seen any yet that are free. So it's kind of like Google Labs, but it's much more of a cohesive structure surrounding different things that businesses might need to continue doing the business of business. So if you want a project management application, this allows you to use the same interface for Gmail for project management. That's really cool. I haven't really seen a lot of the other stuff that's up there. There's document management, customer management. There's a whole ton of different things that are up there, and everything has peer review elements to it, so that if you like it, you can give it 1 to 5 stars. If you didn't like it, you can give it 1 to 5 stars. You can basically run the gamut of different applications and give feedback about it, and hopefully the cream will rise to the top. So I thought it was a pretty cool little application marketplace that was coming out, and wanted to kind of showcase it a little bit. Alright, now the next little item that we got for you here is unfortunately labeled steampunk. I love steampunk stuff normally. I do, however, get incredibly irritated when everything that has any kind of wood or brass element, or even is a little shiny and not normal, they immediately label it steampunk. But over at Device.com, they have an incredibly complex, crazy thing, which is basically a MIDI synthesizer using Legos and what they consider steampunk technology. So it's built out of brass, which is why they're saying that it's steampunk, but it has Legos, which makes it awesome enough to put onto this show. So I'm going to kind of show you on the podcast, I'm actually going to show you the stuff that they're doing. I'm not going to do the I'm not going to go through the trouble of actually trying to showcase the video, because I know it comes through a little bit too choppy. But basically, by adding and removing different Lego blocks, you change the sounds that it actually makes. Now, all of the sounds are incredibly grating to your ear and kind of nasty to boot, but it's still just cool that somebody would take it this far. Now, I can't tell if they're using regular Legos or if these are special Legos that have some kind of conducive element, or if it works off of some other stuff. But all of the information is over at themakeazine.com. So if you just basically go over to blog.makeazine.com, you can find it. I thought it was relatively awesome and that you pretty much needed to know about it. So, I mean, hey, it's Legos. It's what they consider steampunk. It's craftiness. I thought it was pretty fun. Next little thing that we have up for you here, Energizer battery charger is hiding a Trojan virus, and it's been hiding it for over 3 years. Now, if you've ever seen any one of the Energizer battery chargers that work via USB, these things are incredibly useful. They're a tiny little USB plug that basically uses the 5 volts of powers that come out of a standard USB plug to recharge either 2 AA's or 2 AAA. All right, it's called the Energizer Duo USB battery charger, and the problem with it is there's some kind of rootkit or some kind of malware actually on it that allows people to gain remote access of your system. I put a little bit of a picture up there so you can actually kind of see what it is. This way, if you know anyone who has one of these things, you would kind of request that they don't use it. It's basically all you can really do. There is no workaround. There is no fix or anything like this. The only thing is, if you have an Apple laptop, it's not effective. The OS X version of the software was found to be clean. So the Mac people have yet one more thing that they can kind of lord over the PC people. So somebody got in there and they done did something wrong. All right, next little item on the agenda here is you have malware everywhere else, but app magnets actually look incredibly spiffy. This is one from over at ogizmo.com, and this time somebody actually turned their entire fridge into an iPhone, and basically all of the little application icons and everything that you can have there are all movable and changeable based on the fact that they're all basically magnets. I thought this was really, really cool. Usually I don't care about the iPhone modification stuff. I don't care about the Android modification stuff. No, not very many people go out there and build like alters to their Android phones, although I think they kind of should. Overall, the smartphone revolution, as a lot of people are calling it, is really starting to pull in a lot of people who normally would never have had the chance to geek out about something. So it's kind of funny to see what different people are doing in creative homage to their particular phone device. Just remember, in the end, if it doesn't make phone calls for you, it's not a very good thing. Up next, we have an interesting story that I'm not linking to directly just because I keep hearing different news and stuff, but basically everybody has understood that Apple likes secrecy. The problem with developing an application for the iPhone is that you are basically locked into how they want to do it. Yeah, so it's like there's one ecosystem that where everything goes through. There's one gateway. The entire process is somewhat arcane. I mean, people don't even know how long it's going to take for their applications to get approved. But the funny thing is that you also have to sign a non-disclosure agreement saying that you won't talk about Fight Club while you're there. And the funny thing is, one of the developers was actually NASA, and there was a workaround on this, basically saying that the Electronic Freedom Foundation filed a Freedom of Information Act request specifically for the Apple non-disclosure agreement. Because NASA is a government-funded institution, they had to comply with the Freedom of Information Act. So the entirety is published on the internet. So if you want to sit there and look for some type of malfeasance, then you can wander through it, let your eyes peruse. I'm just not a fan of the hold that one marketplace has over a device. And it's going to get worse with the iPad. The thing that I keep going back to is that if Microsoft were to do this to their phone or anything other than like a strictly game system, like the Xbox 360, nobody's going to argue that, yes, it would be really cool to run other applications on it, but in order to keep the games and the gaming experience as clean as possible, that's all there is. You want a nice clean experience when you're talking about a game, and yes, you can kind of extrapolate that onto when you're talking about a phone, but as soon as you start getting into computers, which is what an iPad really is, then I just get worried about it. I don't like the idea behind the control. So Moving right along, stepping off my soapbox one more time. Stranger danger. a corner collision warning system. I thought this was three kinds of awesome. I mean, this is something that's incredibly useful and at the same point in time, very, very blindingly simple. It's basically an article from over at a Yanko Design that showcases a tiny little pad that would appear at the corner. So like when you have a blind corner or something like that, when you're walking towards it, a proximity sensor would turn the other tab red. When somebody else is walking from the other way, it would turn that tab red. And when people are coming from both directions, both tabs would turn red. So this way you'd have to figure it out on your own. I thought that was pretty awesome, so I wanted to make sure that everybody kind of figured that out and heard that. There's no word yet on whether or not they were actually going to be selling them, but still I wanted to just kind of pass it along. The next little thing is Happy Animal Golf Balls. Now this was from over at Yanko Design as well. There's an artist who actually went through the trouble of creating different sets of animals that all exist from golf balls. And there's tiny little plasticine feet on all of them. There's pigs, there's sheep, there's cows, there's dogs. I thought that it was pretty awesome. The only thing that I keep looking at it is, you know, I'm not a hugely fantastic artist or anything. I can get by. If I was going to do this, I would probably just paint golf balls on my own to look like things. The pig one is probably the most obtuse. I mean, some of the other ones, like the dog, the goat, I think that's I think it's a donkey, and then they have another cow and a sheep. I mean, they're all pretty pretty simple. You know, they have like two eyes, a nose, a mouth. The problem with it, when you get really up close, the pig one just looks incredibly out of scale. Like, it has one giant eye and then a small eye, which is one of the things where I was kind of looking at it. I was like, you know what? If I was just going to have golf balls that were painted, I would probably do it myself and then cut my losses. I think that would actually be kind of a cool toy. There was a toy that Paul got when he was really, really young that was basically tiny little golf ball sized clear balls, and on the inside of the ball there was like spinning dinosaurs and stuff like that that would kind of make him want to play with the balls, which was really cool. So I mean, I could see a market for this, but I'm not entirely sure on how it gets how it fits into a design blog. So I just thought I'd pass that along because I thought it was pretty funny. All right, and then the next little thing that we have for you here, which is actually the last little thing in the Geekcraft section at the Caffeination Podcast, is a laptop ban. Now, more and more schools are starting to ban laptops in class. And depending on how you actually think about this, you could think that it's good, you could think that it's bad. When I was in college, I remember I was one of the only people that had a laptop in class, and that was because when I was a senior in high school, Apple Computers actually gave me a laptop for the position that I held on the Citywide Student Council. You know, basically, it was their present at the end of the year. The president of the Citywide Student Council got a laptop, so I got a laptop. I was sitting there in class. My teachers hated it because the way that laptops work is, I mean, a tablet computer might be different. They're saying that basically it puts a wall in between the student and the teacher. Breaks up the attention line. I mean, it does a whole lot of different things, and it also is kind of like a screen between the pupil and the teacher, so that, you know, the kid can do things that the professor can't see. So it's an easy way. The kids can jump on, they can play with Facebook, they can do a whole bunch of other stuff, and they're not learning. So now there's a kind of a backlash against technology. Now, I got to tell you, folks, from all the reading I've done and all the research and anthropology and whatever you have, this is only the beginning. You're going to start seeing more and more backlashes against technology to the point where it gets kind of scary to see exactly how far people will go to come out against it or combat the use of technology in different ways. You can already see it with some of the older people that are out there that decry the death of the post office, and you know, the people who are pining for the fjords now, the people who are actually pining for the newspapers. And yes, this is probably going to be one of the hardest transitions that we have ever had. I mean, from way back in the time when the Gutenberg Bible and the printing press basically put hundreds of thousands of monks out of business from the practice of copying manuscripts and stuff like that. It basically took the process of drafting knowledge from one generation to the next and put it into a different group of people's hands. That was huge. This is going to be a similar kind of upheaval, because with the automation of different things, a lot of the manual tasks and everything that people have relied on for sustenance for so long are getting phased out. And whereas before with the Gutenberg Bible and everything, it was not an overnight thing. It's not like all of a sudden, you know, you were reading the Times Picayune you were reading, you know, the Habsburg Post Gazette or something the next day after Gutenberg rolled out a printing press. What you saw was, you know, it took a long progression of time, and it was still an incredibly painful experience to actually be a part of. This is not only an incredibly painful experience, it's not like you can just wait till all the postal workers retire and then close the thing down because it's not working. People have to find a way to adapt to a much quicker change in situation. So it's going to be rough. So this is the first kind of, I guess, salvo fired by the other side. Basically, they're saying that professors want people to take notes. They want people to, you know, physically, you know, write down notes and do a whole bunch of other things. I personally think that the way in which teaching is done needs to shift. I think that you're not going to outlaw technology. You're not going to push it outside the room, the walls of the class. You need to find a way that either makes use of the fact that technology is available or change the way technology is used as a whole. I don't think you can just kind of block it off and say, hey, you know, we're just not going to use it. I don't think it's going to work. The interesting thing is that they actually have, in this article from over at MSNBC, which was sent to me by my wife, they said there's one professor who actually went to the trouble of, it was in, I think, a chemistry class. He went to the trouble of dropping a laptop in a bin and pouring liquid nitrogen over top of it, then picking the laptop up and slamming it down, shattering it. So there's universities that are on board with this, not the shattering of laptops, rather, but the with the laptop bans. There's all kinds of high schools and everything across the country, so it's interesting to see exactly where this is going to end up. So, I mean, if anybody else out there has any comments or feedback or things you'd like to add for that, please feel free to drop a line to caffeination@gmail.com or just comment on the blog post after it goes up. All right, we now come to the end of the Geek Cruft section here at the Caffeination Podcast, incredibly early in the show today, but that's because we have a decent amount of food and caffeinated bits lined up and waiting to go. Just a reminder, in case you happened in halfway through, we are listening to the Caffeination, well, you are listening, I'm speaking, the Caffeination podcast. Yeah, they could just firewall the unrelated sites. The problem is students can load movies and other stuff that are on their laptops, and it's, you can sort of see where some of the distractions are playing a major role in the problems that they're having. But some of it's internet access, some of it's a lack of, I guess, respect for the teachers by the students, and a little bit vice versa. It's like, you know, they think, oh, stupid kid, he's just playing on the laptop again. All right, moving right on into the food and caffeinated bits section. We have an interesting little thing. The first one we have up here is actually from over at ogizmo.com. If you've ever been like me and you've struggled with the placement of the different correct pieces of silverware and whatnot on a place setting, then you have no more problems. You can get these little placemats, and they're available for $27 each, which is incredibly expensive. This could be something that you should be able to print out and then just run with it. This is place setting placemats. So it shows you where the fork, where the knife, where everything is supposed to go. The wine glass, the coffee cup, the soup spoon, the salad fork, I don't even know how many other things are supposed to go on there. But everything is laid out in gorgeous detail. I'm just waiting for somebody to kind of basically break this down into a printable so I can print it out on my plotter and just have a bunch of these sitting around the table upstairs. I think that's unbelievably awesome. It's incredibly ingenious that they did it. The price point is what's going to kill it, though. Nobody's going to pay, you know, $27 per placemat. All right, next little thing that we got for you here is actually a wonderful article from over at jim7.com, and it basically called a sin that I myself have perpetuated at times. It's people's response to using milk or cream in coffee. And this is specifically dealing with the cappuccino. And they're saying that he was basically saying that a cappuccino has a conflict. Cappuccino is a very simple beverage. It's frothed milk and espresso. The espresso is put in first. You pour a nice little dollop of frothed milk right in the center, and then there you go, and that's how you have it. The problem, he said, is that milk is treated like an enemy more often than not in coffee circles, especially coffee snobbery circles, and that even the terminology used is basically like, how can it cut through the milk to actually come through for the taste of the coffee itself? And he goes down a whole bunch of different things on how people are saying and how people are kind of eyeballing different espresso roasts, different everything, and basically saying where the quality is coming through and how milk can fit into that. And I just thought that a bunch of these are really interesting ways to take this discussion into a new direction. So I'm curious what other people think about this, just because I think it's a fantastic discussion to start. I personally don't like coffee with cream because I like tasting the coffee, but I do make espressos all the time. I had a nice double one tonight, and I do make cappuccinos from time to time as well. So the only way you can make a cappuccino is with the milk component. I understand that going in, and that's pretty much how I operate. So I highly suggest you head on over to jim7.com to actually read that one. All right, the next little thing that we got for you here is a crazy design concept for somebody who actually likes instant coffee. Now, I like instant coffee to a certain point. There are extant, I would say, different types of instant coffee which are much, much better than other ones. For instance, I cannot stand Taster's Choice coffee. I've never been able to have a good cup of Taster's Choice coffee. I can tell when restaurants use it. I have no clue what it is that they do to their instant coffee or their even brewed coffee, but I cannot actually drink it. That's the one kind of coffee I can't drink. I'm not a real big fan of Maxwell House or Nescafe, and I can drink Folgers, although I don't like to. It's kind of a bitter taste, and I like, I mean, as per usual, Chock Full of Nuts, out of all the supermarket brands, is probably the best for the money, for my understanding. This is an interesting design concept because there is no spoon. Much like the Matrix, this is basically an interesting coffee cup. Actually, it's a coffee cup and a teacup for interesting uses on how you can actually create an interesting dispensing device for how you would actually get instant coffee shaken and popped out, and it works perfectly fine without any kind of spoon at all. I thought this was really neat, and it's interesting because, you know, instant coffee gets a real bad rap, and some of it's deservedly so, others not so much. So any kind of a design concept which kind of takes it outside of itself is a something I'd like to kind of eyeball. All right, next little thing that we got up for you here. Now, I like drinking beer. I think it's a wonderful beverage. It's been around for a while, so we know it's not going anywhere. But one of the problems that you get when you have someone who enjoys beer is that, you know, not all beer comes with twist-off caps. And that, you know, more often than not, you're going to be in some place where you don't have a readily available bottle opener. So there's a person who actually found a way to make something he called the Happy Hour Timepiece. It's a thick banded watch that actually acts as a bottle opener. Now, the only thing that I'm looking at is I watched the video, and it seems to be incredibly easy to use. The watch looks relatively industrial and rather hardcore. The only problem is when you're actually opening the beer bottle, if you don't do it exactly rightly, you're kind of putting pressure on the pressure point of your wrist, and it's not a very firm area in your body. So it's interesting as a kind of niche device, but I don't think it's really very practical. What I would suggest is incredibly practical is actually the ring thing from over at ThinkGeek. It's a tiny little ring with a little bottle opener in it. It's basically meant to have the bottle opener on the inside. Otherwise, it just looks like a regular silver banded ring. And they have it in all different kinds of styles and everything. The watch was slightly more expensive. This is only $7.99. And you really can't beat that for that. You know what I mean? $7.99 for a bottle opener is relatively inexpensive. I can't seem to find the happy hour timepiece and exactly how much that one is, but I just thought it was rather awesome and wanted to pass it along because I like where they're heading with it. It's just not a feasible solution for me. All right, now the next thing that we got for you here, we are rapidly approaching St. Paddy's Day. If you are Irish, then you already know that. If you're not, then you're probably planning to attempt to be Irish on that day. A lot of people, seasoned drinkers, consider it amateur day. A lot of people who aren't seasoned drinkers consider an amateur week. There have been several what they call errand expresses here in Philadelphia, where it just takes people up and down Frankfurt Avenue and a couple other places throughout the city just drinking on the weekends in March. It's March. People are just going out and drinking to excess just for the hell of it. So I thought it was kind of interesting, and we should actually pull a old post out of the archives, and it's something that I've made fairly recently. I love making these. It's the Caffeination Scotch-Irish Coffee. I myself am Scotch-Irish, so I'm not entirely Irish. My wife is Irish, very Irish. Her family is very, very Irish. So our kid's Irish. He's a Scotch-Irish, too. So when it comes time to actually make a good Irish coffee, I can show him how it's done. I do not like the Americanized version of an Irish coffee, I gotta tell you. If you have, specifically I'm looking at restaurants, and I'm specifically looking at Olive Garden. They make the absolute worst Irish coffee that I've ever had in my life. It's just, it's a blended together mash of stuff that has alcohol thrown into it. I wouldn't even be surprised if it was just, you know, like dishwater that they put alcohol in. But then again, if you're trying to make an Irish drink, you probably wouldn't want to go to an Italian restaurant to do it. So I have a lovingly crafted recipe up there, which basically says you take a nice clear glass and you you drop in a shot of mine is Scotch because I like Scotch and I'm Scotch-Irish, so that's where you get the Scotch-Irish. But you drop in a shot of Scotch in there or your favorite Irish whiskey. Then you mix in a tablespoon of brown sugar to kind of sweeten it up. From there, you add 2 shots of espresso. So I'm going to kind of switch over so you can kind of see exactly what I'm talking about. From there, you drop in the 2 shots of espresso and you... Then you let that rise, and you have the nice crema up at the top. It's already mixed with the alcohol in there. And then on top of that, what you do to actually create it and make it a truly Irish coffee is, in at least in my estimation, is before you froth the milk from your espresso machine or whatever, you actually put a shot of Bailey's Irish Cream into the milk so that when you froth it, you're actually making an alcoholic froth to sit on top of the drink. So... I usually top it with a little bit of cinnamon or a little bit of chocolate, and it tastes incredibly wonderful. So I have the recipe up there. So if you want, no curdling, I swear, it really doesn't. If you do it right, the alcohol prevents, if you do it right, the alcohol and the coffee do not let the milk curdle. If you don't do it right, It curdles up real quick. I do know from drinking Irish Car Bombs, which is basically a shot of Bailey's Irish Cream dropped into a nice tall beer, that it will curdle incredibly quickly. I think it's actually specifically dropped into a Guinness. You have to drink it very quickly. It has an aftertaste exactly like chocolate milk, and I know way too many people who get way too drunk on them. All right, moving right along to the next little recipe or next little thing. There's a wonderful review of the My Pressy Twist over at dailyshotofcoffee.com. Mike Crimmins actually went through and wrote an incredibly good review of the My Pressy Twist. Now, here's the thing. I want to point you over to his blog because I think it's a very, very nice review of the actual piece. Here's the thing. I actually was sent a My Pressy Twist to review right before the holidays. I have video footage. I have a whole bunch of other stuff. It retails for about $150. I did not write the review as of yet. First of all, because there was a problem with the video I took. And second of all, because I had problems with the actual unit. And I'm trying to determine whether or not the problems that I experienced were a result of a faulty unit or if other people experienced something similar. Specifically, when I pressed the button, hot water spewed on my hand, and that's not a good thing to have for a handheld espresso machine. So I'm leaning more towards the fact that I probably had a faulty unit, and I don't want to, you know, report on something like that. But, you know, if something fails, I'd kind of want it to fail gracefully, and burning your hand isn't necessarily gracefully for me. All right, next little thing that we have up for you here is a wonderful announcement. If you've been following the Caffeination for just a little while, then you realize that we covered a story which is basically a Canon telephoto lens that is actually a thermos. It was actually given out at a trade show relatively recently. Canon apparently got so much positive press from this that rather than just keeping it as swag, they decided to have a limited production run of them. You can actually go and pre-order them for $30 a piece, which is an incredibly steep price for this, but if you're a photo nut, this is a fantastic gift. So I just wanted to pass it along because it's unbelievable. I love it when companies respond to the viral nature of things and actually give you what the public wants. I think it's fantastic, so... All right, that about wraps it up for the Caffeination podcast here for today. We're coming in just a little bit over time, but I think with editing, we'll come back on down. Thank you ever so much for listening. This has been Caffeination number 414, the broke and fixed edition here at the Caffeination podcast. So we're going to try and make sure that the audio gets up and out and correct this time around. I actually had to republish the last episode because when everything came back up, that post disappeared, but the audio is still there. So thanks for sticking with us, and stay caffeinated, people.